the old ship of Zion still sailing today.
If you ask Ed why do you put these metal parts in song, his pat answer is to better speak the voice of the Lord.
Each instrument's a crazy quilt of heavy, rough sawn wood scraps from a local sawmill. Oak, walnut, linden, pine, and cedar. Some were left natural, but most were finished out with red barn paint.
Today on Arts and Letters, we'll be talking with musicians Kelly and Donna Mulholland. Kelly's book, True Faith, True Light, published by the University of Arkansas Press, traces the life of preacher and farmer Ed Stille, who created musical instruments out of anything at hand.
A tailpiece might be made from a rusty hinge, nut and saddle from a stake bone sitting on top of a stack of dimes.
And on each instrument, Ed inscribed the words, true faith, true light, have faith in God.
Kelly and Donna Mulholland and the devotional art of Ed Stille on Arts and Letters.
The old ship of Zion still sailing today, and a gathering pilgrim the long and last way. She's landed her millions and still landing more. Oh, the state of all ages on some far shore. The old ship of Zion unfailing.
The early instruments had no writing. And it was several years into his journey, probably 5 or 6 years into his journey, where he discovered what a router was. He had no money, and so he prayed for a router, and he was very talkative about this prayer to his relatives. And the relatives got tired of hearing it, and they eventually bought him a router, and his prayers were answered.
From the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities. Today we'll be talking with Kelly and Donna Mulholland about the life and living legacy of Arkansas native Ed Stille, who for 20 years worked tirelessly to create some 200 one-of-a-kind instruments, only to give them away.
That's true, you know, and actually, the frets were usually made of brazing rods, and if you look inside the soundbox, you're going to find saw blades, pot lids, metal pipes, glass bottles, dinner forks, and then actually there's two that actually have an aerosol can inside the body.
Out over life's ocean still sailing, defying the tempest, she's riding the foam, while the old ship of Zion is sailing home.
Since the book was finished, about 8 or 9 instruments appeared, and 2 of them have dinner forks inside, carefully matted.
Maybe they're tuning forks.
So as he created these instruments, did he talk about why he put these things inside?
It's fascinating to me because there's a lot of science going on here, but Ed doesn't talk about that. The reality is that his instruments are very heavy and thick. He does not have the equipment to thickness a piece of wood down to the very thin piece of what a standard modern guitar would be made out of. And so it really doesn't respond in the way that a normal guitar would. It's just too thick. So innately, he felt like he had to compensate for that and immediately started using metallic objects as a sort of amplification.
This is one of the old farm boy's 6-string boxes that he calls a guitar. He don't know how to make them and he don't know how to play them, but he's a Wheeling Wilson, and he believes that God has got riches untold. As the prodigal son said, my father has food in his spare. He got plenty for it.
And it does kind of work. Strangely enough, he did that from the very start. Right now, as I'm talking, I'm holding the second instrument he ever made. And here it is. There's an aluminum pot, aluminum cooking pot. And it's not just haphazardly mounted in the center. It's actually spring-mounted and attached to the back of the instrument very carefully so that it rings like a bell. I'll show you. You know, if it wasn't carefully mounted, it would be muted. But it rings clear. And then, of course, the bridge on this instrument, I wish you could see, is made from a giant steak bone.
And is it a cooking pot?
It is a cooking pot. And this one shows evidence of experimentation because it's been fretted twice. This one, if you look at it closely, you can see that it was fretted and it just didn't work. And also there were different style of frets. So later on, somewhere down the years, after he discovered brazing rods as his fret material, he refretted it again.
And it's interesting because those frets aren't necessarily evenly spaced.
No, they're not.
They're what we call higgledy-piggledy.
Every instrument is different. On this particular instrument, there's kind of a safe zone, right, that within about four frets. Here's the part that works. Now start going up. That's not too bad.
No. You make all of his instruments.
You know what? I take it back.
Beautiful.
That's not too bad. Maybe I ought to venture up there more often.
But you got to be careful, right?
You got to be careful.
When Ed first started making these instruments, he went to a music store and showed the slab what he was going to make them out of. And they said, you know, you can't make heavy boxes. And he said, the Lord never gave me the word can't.
It's almost like he's reinventing the wheel every time he starts because they're just utterly different. Like, for instance, what I call the metallic loop inside. At first, I thought it was random. But when the X-rays started to emerge, I started to notice a pattern, and there was a lot more mindfulness in the way he was working.
Let's hear from songcatcher Max Hunter, who collected songs from the area.
1958, and Ed Stilley at Hogs Called Holler. Ed is a young fella that Aunt Fanny raised.
So tell us about his early life.
Hogs Called Holler is a very remote holler, not too far from Eureka Springs, which is a well-known tourist town in Arkansas. And when I first met Ed, I asked him naively, so Ed, have you lived here your whole life? And Ed looked at me and said, no. I was born clear on the other side of that hill over there. He was born in 1930, and in those days they had no electricity. They drank the water out of the Hogs Call Creek.
And he was raised partly by his parents and partly by Fanny Prickett.
And Dale lives with Aunt Fanny, and Ed's going to sing a couple of three songs for me. First is My Mother's Bible.
I hold a treasure, oh, I pray that beyond my measure, for it brings to me sweet memories of old.
And he married Eliza Miller in 1959, and they built a home on a sliver of that Ozark hillside just above the scalds of Hog Scald Creek.
But this is a place where they scalded hogs.
Absolutely. Right in front of the driveway that goes up to Ed's house, there is this beautiful creek, and it's a very unusual geological formation. It's solid limestone, and there are pools about the size of a bathtub that have been naturally formed in this creek.
Limestone, out of limestone.
And so apparently, even during Civil War days, there are records of people that would scald the hogs in these pools. They would divert the water temporarily so that it avoided these little pools so they'd be stagnant. And then they'd build a bonfire and heat up boulders. And then they'd roll the boulders into the little pools and that would heat the water up. And then they would get the hogs in there to scald the hair.
Those wild hogs were pretty bristly and hairy, and
right.
They had to get the hair off those hogs.
Now, interestingly enough, in that same spot in the early 1900s, there was a preacher named Preacher Weatherman, and he started holding church services down in the scalds.
And baptizing people in the hog scalds.
There's actually a photograph of Ed baptizing somebody down in Hog Scald Holler as well.
February the 5th, 1958, and Aunt Fanny Prickett, Hogs Called Holler, Arkansas, is going to sing part of a song that she calls the Model Church. Aunt Fanny is 84 years old, and she's just getting over a very bad case of pneumonia when she sang this. I used to have to go past Aunt Fanny's house on the country road on the way to see Allie Parker, and Aunt Fanny is a mighty fine lady.
Well, the Model Church found worship there today. It made me think of good old days before my hair was gray.
So Ed marries in 1959, Eliza Miller. Obviously, she's had quite an influence on his life.
Well, Ed and Eliza, they had two girls and three boys on that hard scrabble patch of land. It provided everything they needed to get by. They had a mule, a few cows, chickens, a huge garden that Ed and Eliza provided for their five children.
Children seem to be a major theme in this book.
I think we know 4 out of the 5.
They love to play music together. We see them at gatherings.
We know their grandchildren quite well.
Right. Do they all play musical instruments?
Yeah, I think they all play musical instruments, now that I think about it.
Valerie, one of the older granddaughters who lives with them, we've watched her grow up since she was real little, but she can play by ear every song that Ed sings, and Valerie will sit down, and Ed will be singing, and he'll just pick any key randomly out of his head, and she can follow and track him amazingly. And he can change keys with his voice in the middle, not even realizing that he's doing it, and she'll just follow him. She's been playing with him her whole life, and it's just beautiful to watch.
Wow.
That's what I'll do until my dying day.
There's a nice sample of the three of those playing and singing with her on the piano.
Oh, that's cool.
If I should be living when Jesus comes and you know the day and the hour, I'd like to be standing at Mother's tomb when Jesus comes in his hour.
Well, you know, Ed is actually a living encyclopedia of hymns. Not just the chorus. He knows every verse to every hymn. And
remembers them.
When I can hear Jesus, my Savior, say, shake hands with Mother again.
Recently, he's starting to slow down a little bit, but in the old days, you ask Ed to sing, and you better be ready to sit down for a while, because it could go on for 45 minutes.
And now, my dear Mother, it gives me great joy to see you again today.
And there's almost no break between one hymn and the next hymn. He's already deciding which one he's going to sing. And not only that, but Eliza knows the words to all these hymns too. And they sing together. They say that they sing every day.
During the holidays, they made sorghum with a mule-driven turnstile. And every neighbor around Hawkskull Holler got to share in that bounty. And their water came from a hillside spring, and it filtered into the Hawkskulls below, a section of the creek bed that was carved out of the limestone like Kelly talked about.
And of course, that's why they call it Hawkskull Holler. He did various things to make his living. He also would brush hog people's fields. He would take care of people's cows. It was kind of whatever he could find close to home.
And he was a preacher, too.
But never a paid preacher.
Right. Yeah. Just a kind of traveling preacher around
just
the region.
Right around the area.
But then mostly he had his farm.
That was his main sustenance.
He had some cows, he had chickens, he had a very beautiful garden. They would take their harvest to a grocery store in Eureka Springs in the back of the truck and just put a sign up and sell groceries right in the parking lot.
That Ozark sun was beating down, dropped my plow to the rocky ground, and the world turned black in a heart attack, and a vision passed before my eyes. Was I dead? I pray the Lord take me to the other side.
This is Arts and Letters. We're listening to True Faith, True Light, the devotional art of Ed Stille. We'll be back in a moment. Born in 1930, Ed Stille grew up just a few miles from what would become his Hogscald homestead. Raised partly by his parents and partly by Fanny Prickett, he married Eliza Miller in 1959 and built a home on the sliver of Ozark Hillside just above the Scalds of Hogscald Creek. They raised 2 girls and 3 boys on that hard scrabble patch of land that provided most everything they needed to get by. Then one day in 1979, when he was working in his field plowing with his mule, Ed Stille felt his chest tighten. Certain a heart attack was coming on, he lay on the ground, looking at the sky, when appeared a vision. Let's return to our conversation with Kelly and Donna Mulholland about the devotional art of Ed Stille.
That Ozark sun was beating down, dropped my plow to the rocky ground, and the world turned black in a heart attack, and a vision passed before my eyes. Was I dead or alive? I pray the Lord take me to the other side.
One day in 1979, he's working in the field with his mule and he's plowing. He feels his chest tighten. He thinks it's the end. He thinks he's having a heart attack.
That's the most important moment. We asked him this question 20 years ago. And his response was most unexpected. He said that he was plowing his field with his mule, and that he, at this moment, he felt like he was having a heart attack. And so he lay on the ground and looked at the sky. These are his words. He saw himself as a giant tortoise swimming in a raging river, and that his five children were tiny tortoises hanging onto the shell. And he knew somehow that he had to get his children to the other side of this river safely, and that if he could get there, that the Lord would tell him why he was here on earth and what he was to do with the rest of his life.
I became a great tortoise, swimming like hell, my five little children clinging to my shell. Right.
Yeah, and he also, he knew somehow that if he succeeded, then he would understand why he was on earth and what his ultimate purpose would be.
And from a raging river deep and wide, that day I heard the Lord confide, shed your vanity, shed your pride, and I'll see you make it to the other side.
But he was able to figure out, symbolically at least for him, what this meant.
And I knew that moment my fate was sealed when the Lord told me he'd make me a deal. I'd deliver my children to that shore. He'd show me what these hands were for. Build guitars in his name. That's what I'll do until my dying day.
And that's when, surprisingly, what he heard was build musical instruments and give them to children.
And I made a guitar for the Lord. And the Lord looked down and smiled when I gave it away to.
And of course, this is something he has never done before. He had a guitar. He could play guitar. He used it as a vehicle for preaching, basically. But never had it occurred to him to make a guitar.
And I sawed that wood up into boards. And I made a guitar for the Lord. And the Lord looked down and smiled when I gave it away to a little child. Pork chop bone, whittled for a bridge, tailpiece made from a rusty old hinge, door spring saw blades mounted in the middle, Lord, like the sound when them old parts jiggle. Cut out the frets from a brazen rod, carved on the top, true faith, true light, have faith in God.
He had no one to ask, and making a guitar is certainly not a simple task.
And he still had to work the farm all day and do his chores. So he would literally work all day and then stay up into the wee hours of the night making these instruments.
So he's a farmer. He plays instruments, but he has no sense of how to create one.
No.
And he uses what's at hand.
He's pretty handy. Everything on the property was built by Ed. But making a musical instrument, again, is such a delicate thing compared to building a shed. And he had no knowledge of such things except by visually looking at what he had. And his old Silvertone guitar was basically the model.
Did he take that one apart to begin?
That guitar still survives. I thought it was gone for a long time. It was a 1947 Silvertone archtop. I thought it disappeared. And finally, quite late in this journey, I noticed that there was this strange-looking instrument still left in his shop without strings on it. And I took it in and showed it to Ed. He had replaced the top, the back, the neck. He had put saw blades and pot lids inside. The only thing left of the original Silvertone was the sides.
So I made me another, and the hunters would follow for nearly every child in Hawks Called Holler. Oh, but now I'm old and moving slow, but his love helps carry me wherever I go.
That was it.
So this was his experimental project. Did he test things out before he tried putting them into the actual instruments?
One of the most interesting things about his instruments is that the top and the back are contoured. In other words, they're arched. And to do that as a woodworker complicates the whole process tenfold. To make a flat top instrument would be very simple. To make it have an actual curvature takes a lot of work. And yet, every single instrument except the first couple have a curvature on the top and the back. I have assumed that the reason for that is because he based everything on the Silvertone, which happened to be an arch top. with an arched back as well. I have no proof of that, but he went to an awful lot of work to put a little bit of an arch on every instrument he made.
Though I walk where they came, still I rejoice in my Savior's name. And Lord, maybe someday you'll call me again and walk with me to the river's end. Oh, I hope you're proud of all I've done. I kept my promises, everyone. And I'll look into your eyes and say, Lord, take me to the other side.
How did his wife feel about this moment of inspiration?
I imagine it was frustrating at times for her because, you know, there was a lot of tasks to do around the farm. Although I have never heard that he dropped the ball on that. You know,
he worked late into the night in his own time.
I think she's very proud of him. She eventually, I remember that she said, when are you going to make me one of those?
Why children? Why give them away?
His motivations are kind of mysterious. He gave them basically to children who were too young to play the instruments. They're not the easiest thing in the world to play. The action is what they would call difficult. And
they're heavy.
So as a six-year-old child, it would be quite a difficult thing to tackle. And the reality is that over the years, Ed kind of gave them to whoever wanted one. He gave them to lots of relatives who were already adults. He gave them to children just spontaneously. He didn't have to know them well. When we first were visiting Ed, he had a ring notebook that had a list of children in waiting. So I really felt guilty about wanting one myself because I saw this long list of kids in front of me, you know, and I wouldn't dare ask him for one.
So the community began to want these.
Yeah.
Some people appreciated and understood the folk art and the specialness of it and treasured them, but other people didn't. They just thought they were strange, heavy, unplayable instruments, and they would be in barns. We'd find them with mud dauber nests in them, stashed away. So some of them were not appreciated, but some were. One of the sweetest stories, Ed needed cataract surgery, and a doctor in Eureka Springs knew of his instruments, but did the cataract surgery just as a gift, and then Ed brought him a guitar, and the doctor is so proud of that.
We asked Ed once, how do you come up with these shapes? And the fact is, he doesn't really come up with them. It's more or less random and more attached to the wood's willingness to bend. He would actually boil what would become the sides overnight in a trough.
In a big cattle trough.
And then once they become supple, he would thread the side pieces through this pegboard that he'd created. And he would bend them pretty much as far as he could bend them. He says, I bend them until I hear them start to break. And that's literally true. And so he would thread these pieces around this pegboard. And then after it settled down and dried, it would become stationary, he would stand back and look at those pieces, and that's where the moment of creation would start. Well, I guess that might make a nice mandolin.
Cool.
Or maybe this would be a good fiddle. He would go with the wood. That's completely backwards from the standard procedure in making a guitar, where you simply design the shape and then you cut everything out to match that design. There was no drawing that started this process.
It's very organic.
He had faith that he could make one of these things.
Yes.
Out of some idea that he had that wasn't necessarily formalized, he would organically create it, right? I'm going to make a butterfly instrument.
Very fortunate to be given the butterfly guitar. One of the last pieces he made, this was the tail end of his journey, was right about 2004. The bottom part of it kind of looks like a guitar, but then it's got these giant ovaloid wings. Some people have called it the Mickey Mouse guitar. But the top, it's like a crazy quilt. There are five pieces of wood that create the top. Basswood, there's walnut, cedar, and oak. And then the tail piece of this one is made from a door hinge. The bridge is made from a pork chop bone.
Or the steak, anything that from the dinner the night before, he would just whittle up the bone.
And then the frets are brazing rods. Inside, this one has two door springs. I'll make the sound. And then also this one has a saw blade in the middle, and I can flick it with my fingernail. Let's see.
Big circular saw blade.
And again, you hear how that saw blade is ringing clearly like a bell. And that is key to his design. It's carefully mounted between two large coil springs, and that enables it to ring clearly without being deadened, thus giving it the reverb quality that it has.
How heavy is that?
This is one of the heaviest ones. This is about 12 and a half pounds. The average weight of his guitars is 10 pounds.
Well, the frets seem a little more consistent.
This one's close. His fretting procedure was he had a fingerboard from an old guitar, and he would lay it down next to the new neck that he'd created, and without any marking tools, no straight edge or anything, he would just take a pencil, and he would just draw across and match the old fretboard.
Oh.
And he'd say, now, you got to be real careful on this part. Yeah, well, you're right about that, Ed.
You know? And tell us about the tuning keys.
That's the one part that he did not make, of course.
And the strings.
And there was a local music store in Eureka Springs, and they were being nice to Ed, and I think they gave him a good price on those. But he did have to purchase the tuning pegs and the strings. But everything else is from scratch. That's the only part that's not. And this one, of course, has the inscription, which is done by Router. It says, true faith, true light, have faith in God.
But it's really fun to watch him with the Router. When most people would maybe write their letters on the instrument and then carefully use the Router to follow it, he would just set the Router down and just go for it.
I'll just play a chord real staccato, and then if you listen real close, you might be able to hear some of the reverb tail.
So listen to the after sound after he hits the note.
So that's part of the magic of the theme. Unearthly sound, unlike any guitar, and they're all very, very different in their quality. Part of the reason they're different is because the fretting is so imprecise that each one has its own personality in terms of intonation.
So could you guys sing a little something with this one?
This is a fun song. We
needed a kid-friendly version.
Right. That was appropriate for school children.
Yeah, because we do a lot of work with school
and also
children.
That emphasizes the resourcefulness that it has.
And Ed being an ultimate recycler. And so this is our Ed Story song for kids.
All right. Okay. 2, 3, 4.
Ed Tilly's a hard-working man, raised 5 children off the land, had a flop-eared mule, pulled his plow, chickens in the yard, and a milking cow. When the sun went down at the end of the day, he'd put his plow and his mule away. He'd get out a saw, get out a chisel, grab a hunk of wood, then he'd sing and he'd whistle. Pork chop bone with a Ford bridge, tailpiece made from a rusty old hinge. Door spring saw blades mounted in the middle, Ed like a sound when the mole part jiggle. Whoa. Well, years ago, Ed said to me that right around 1983 that the Lord gave him a special vision, showing him his life's mission. So he made guitars and he gave them away. He never took a dime for pay. He'd get out a saw, get out a chisel, grab a hunk of wood, then he'd sing and he'd whistle. Pork chop bone with a Ford bridge, tailpiece made from a rusty old hinge. Door spring saw blades mounted in the middle, Ed like a sound when he mow part jiggle. Whoa, here we go.
Now on this part, we love to get the kids to whistle. So if you want to whistle in Radio Land along with us.
Tilly, he's a clever man. He used whatever he had on hand, pots and pans and metal things, to help him make them guitars ring. Well, he taught me that I can do most anything I wanted to. I just get out a saw, get out a chisel, grab a hunk of wood, then I sing out and whistle. Here we go. Pork chop bone with a Ford bridge, tailpiece made from a rusty old hinge. Door piece.
small bass mounted in the middle, head like a sound when your Mopar jiggles. Whoa.
So, Donna, tell us about your instrument. It's beautiful, too.
I love this fiddle. The F-holes, for any of you violinists out there, they look like something out of Dr. Seuss book. They're very wiggly and squiggly and very large, and I just love them. And you can see a square metal piece inside, which is part of a chainsaw sprocket or something. And then I have two door springs inside, one on each side. And you could see the tailpiece, long time ago, was way near the bottom of the instrument. And I guess it didn't work there, so he moved it up. But you could still see where it was all screwed in and down below.
A lot of trial and error.
A lot of trial and error on this violin. It's way larger than a regular violin, so it's maybe more the size of a viola. So I have to adjust my fingering dramatically to play it. And it's kind of got a little bit of a scratchy sound, but because of the reverb in it, it kind of sounds like a sitar or something. It kind of has this awesome...
And the back, look at the seams.
Yeah, the back. So it's nailed and glued together, two-piece, with a little seam up the middle and nails on each side of the seam. And it just has this real... You can hear the reverb in it, too. Kind of ethereal.
Yeah. We were surprised to find out that even the fiddle, which has no frets, of course, had included a jingler. And then the jingler is something we were really astonished to find out about. It was quite recent, actually just right before we finished the final version of the book. Ed mentioned to us the jingler, and we said, what is the jingler? We'd never noticed it before because it's not visible. It's actually under the fingerboard. And it's one of his inventions that's completely foreign to the guitar-making world. It's even on Donna's fiddle. Right about the third fret, or where the third fret would be, underneath the fingerboard, there's a metal bar that goes right through the neck. It's called the truss rod. He had a lot more confidence in the truss rod being a component of making sound than guitar builders. They use it just to keep the neck straight, normally.
For strength, yeah.
But Ed carved out a little hollow place in the truss rod underneath the third fret, and he placed a little fragment of metal, just a piece of junk, and screwed it in there real loosely so that it could jangle around. It was not tight. And then he would carefully place the fingerboard over it so that it didn't touch it, so it was allowed it to spin freely, and therefore the jingler. And he believed that this little jingler would get excited when you're playing, and it would chatter on down the truss rod out the echo tube and into the box. Those are his words.
Does it?
I believe that that's pretty far-fetched, but it is so charming. And he was so consistent about it, because once we started x-raying the instruments, well, there was the jingler. You could just barely see this little thing right under about where the third fret would be on every instrument.
Even the violin.
And that was a lot of extra work. Who would have known?
Well, I hope you're proud of all I done. And I kept my promises, everyone. And I'll look into your eyes. Say, Lord, take me to the other side.
This is Arts and Letters. We're listening to Kelly and Donna Mulholland talk about their book, True Faith, True Light, The Devotional Art of Ed Stille. To listen to part two of our conversation with Kelly and Donna Mulholland, go to artsandlettersradio.org.